You're listening to 101.9 FM, KPCR LP, Santa Cruz.
Hi, I'm Eliza Jane Brazier, and you are listening to Drinks with Tony. Get on the Drinks with Tony show.
Yeah. You're listening to Drinks with Tony. I'm your host, Tony Duchesne. Today on the show, we have Eliza Jane Brazier. She's the author of Good Rich People. Eliza, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm excited to have you on. I got to the book came to me like a day or so ago. So I know. As we were talking earlier, speaking of publicists, your publicist was great. No, she's great. She got it to like, she got it to me with like fast, but it, anyway, I shouldn't go on and on about the problems of my life. But I got to read the first 50 pages of it and I'm totally hooked and I can't wait to have
anyway.
No, come on.
Kidding. I'm totally kidding.
but at the same time, the first 50 means a lot, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, you got the vibe.
Yeah. I can't wait to, because I'm hooked. So it's like later this week, I'll have time to like sit down and pleasure read the rest of it.
Yeah, no spoilers anyway. You won't be able to.
Oh no, that's fine. But you know, it's funny. It's like, because I also teach screenwriting. Everyone's like, oh my God, and they're scared of spoilers. I'm like, no, everything's spoiled for us. So what are you working on? It's, you know, there's kind of a.
I actually like spoilers. And this is like, I guess kind of speaks to what you're saying. Just, I think like as a writer, I like to know beforehand going in so I can kind of like analyze how they do something. So I like to be spoiled on everything. I don't like to be surprised because then I'm just reading too fast and I'm like too engaged in the story. And like, I want to be kind of like removed and be like the author analyzing it more than, you know, I get too like too anxious.
Oh, that's funny. There's anxiety involved. That's funny. But also, I think as writers, we are looking for the, how did they get there? How, yeah. And you know, that's when like great writers, I'm just like, oh my God, they got me hooked. They did it. You.
Well, you know what else though? I feel like if you're a writer, you kind of usually know where something's going, right? Cause it's all like, everything kind of follows this traditional story structure. So, you know, if like, you know, so everyone has too good of a moment, you know, someone's going to die.
Right.
Seems really good and solved. You're like, oh, someone's about to die.
Well, what's lovely about your book, the first scene is there's blood in the fountain. So
yeah,
we know it's going dark. there's no spoilers there. You're going to a dark place.
Yeah. We're on a wild ride to a dark place.
I know we take a lot of stuff from like real life. Were you in a situation where around these people that were this wealthy and went, oh my God, I have to write about this? Wealthy and petty, I think is kind of the.
Yeah, I mean, so to be honest, this book was kind of like inspired and fueled by like my real experiences. So I actually lived like below the poverty line, let's say like on a technical level, for like almost a decade.
That's how we do it as writers.
I know, right? I wasn't even a writer back then. I was just like a nothing. You know, and I've also had like brief periods of like being homeless, like living out of my car for like, you know, a few weeks in LA or also in London. That's how I ended up meeting my late husband, because he used to literally have homeless people come and live at his house because he was just nuts.
Wait, you're burying the lead there. Okay, let's go back to that. So you met your husband because you pulled up in a sleeping bag in front of his house?
No, wow. I mean, okay, so.
That's the picture I just had.
Well, I mean, it's actually probably a prettier picture than the reality. I moved to London. I had like this 6 months sort of work visa. And part of that was including like a job that had housing. I was working at a hostel. And after I was there for a month, they changed managers and the manager fired everyone. So I had met my husband the day I got to London and we were just friends, but he literally already had, he had homeless people living with him the entire time that we were together. And it wasn't like sort of like cool, like your cool friend. It was like people who were a lot older, had like serious addiction problems. My husband was really into like helping people.
He sounds amazing.
He needed help. Well, yeah, no, he was amazing. He was really a character, man. So I was only friends with him at that point, but I needed a place to stay. And I was like hanging out with them and there was already kind of people just on the sofas and stuff. And I was like, can I just stay here? So I stayed there, got another job. That job was with really extremely wealthy people in London who turned out to be completely nuts. And he was like, you need to leave there. So came back, lived with him again, got another job. That also didn't work out. So it's like back and forth until we eventually sort of actually started dating and then like kind of living together in a romantic way. But initially, like, it wasn't that. Like, it was literally like, you're the only person I know. And like, I don't know, like, back then I used to be like super, maybe like a little too like trusting, and I would just stay with strangers. So
yeah,
crazy times.
Those are the good times. So
sorry, we got kind of distracted. So
No, we're not distracted. This is great. So yeah. No, I'm always, you know, I have failed relationships. I'm trying to figure it out myself. I'm a divorce fella, you know. So but so when does it turn like, was it awkward when it turned romantic? Was it kind of like, wait, I'm into you and this is freaking me out?
Well, so this is like so awkward. Okay, so this is a lot.
Yes.
So like my memories might be like a little sketchy, but like, to be honest, it's like when I first met him, he had just broken up with his girlfriend who was uber super rich. I can't believe I'm talking about her, but I'm not. So it wasn't like romantic in that case. And a lot of people, honestly, at that time was like this about me, were like, oh, what are you doing? Like hanging out with this girl? Like she's taking advantage of you. You know what I mean? Like, she's living with you. You know, it's like, I couldn't afford to live in London. So it was kind of like a weird time. And then we had, I don't know. And then it was like, we sort of, I guess, started being more like dating. And then he kind of freaked out and was like kicked me out. And then,
well, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Oh, sorry. He calls me up and was like, do you want to meet my parents? And I was like, what? You just kicked me out of the house. So it was a mess. Like it was weird because he was like super into like helping people, but nobody was really helping him. So I ended up being the person who was helping him because he had a lot of problems, you know, up until when he died. He, so it was just.
Oh, like, and I didn't know he died. I didn't know he died. Oh, man. Yeah. When did he die?
7 years ago.
That's rough. You're a widower.
Yeah, no, it's really rough, man. It's crazy. You know, what's interesting too, is like but right before he died, he had a major accident where, I mean, I don't want to go into detail, but he like had an accident where he basically lost the use of his arm. And there was a guy, like I said, there was always someone living on our sofa. So I was actually in like at home at that time in California with my parents, and the guy living on the sofa actually saved his life. So he lived for like another 2 months, but isn't that like crazy that like, I mean, I guess it's just weird because it's like you have these kind of bizarre relationships and just, I don't know. It's interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Well, and also I think, I mean, I think there's something about writers that have like a lot of tragedy. There's an honesty that you read into their writing. So even if it's a book, if it's a yarn, like Good Rich People, you know, that there's tapping into the human condition in a different angle when there's major tragedy. And so there's a way to like go there and kind of be unapologetic about it, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, totally. And I mean, like going back to like talking about the book. So a lot of like my experiences and like the sort of like crazy stuff I went through at that time actually is like kind of in the book in like a fictionalized way. And it's sort of like Demi's backstory. And then with like the rich people. So my husband was a musician. And so he would sometimes play at like the homes of like these extremely wealthy people. And I would also like, I worked at like a pub in Chelsea in London, which was like a posh people pub. And so like, just like those interactions with like these super wealthy people, especially in England, where I think there's another layer of snobbery, because it's a very classist society. Like it's not even just about money, right? It's also like, you have to have been like a lord or an earl or whatever it is.
You had to have some good breeding. The people who have kids, they're not parents, they're studs. And what do you call it? What do you call it in horse terms? Studs and mares when you're breeding.
For sure. Like it's a different level of like snobbery. And there's also like a very kind of vicious sense of humor. I don't know if it's just English or if it's like, but like, yeah, just like, so a lot of that actually informed the sort of wealthy people. And I think like also like to me, it's humor. I think some people read it as being just horrible, but it's kind of that English sense of humor where you're like, this is mean.
Yeah. No, it's you It's interesting that because I would see here I am in Los Angeles, I'm assuming. I'm like, oh man, she was around something, and I'm trying to figure out what part of Los Angeles. I'm like, was she? But it was London that you had this experience, most of this.
Well, yeah. So like a lot of that was going on. To be fair, when I wrote this book, I was living in LA, and mm-hmm. it was originally called Beechwood Canyon. That was like the working title because I was.
I was thinking the Beechwood Canyon Cafe market.
You can see still like the hints of it in it when she talks about going to the market or
the market. Like, that's the one I was thinking.
Yeah. No, originally it was a lot more like grounded in that kind of reality, and it just kind of became crazier and crazier. But so I was living at that time in a duplex, right? And upstairs there was like a really successful director who just had a movie come out, another huge movie. And living with his wife, who was like a writer. And I was downstairs in this super dark, like one bedroom. And even though it was kind of like a creepy place, it was the nicest place I had ever lived. So like, whilst I'm like writing about like, I guess like my own experiences going from like being like, having like so little to now I have more, but like people would still be like, oh, this place is creepy. Like this place is weird. And I'd be like, are you kidding me? Like it has one bedroom.
Yeah.
Hello.
and the area is just gorgeous and perfect and central.
Yeah, no, yeah. Yeah, so like when I wrote it, I was living in LA. So that also like for sure like inspired it and like the vibe, and hopefully that like comes through. My parents are from LA, like my grandfather and everything, like used to have a house there when I was a kid. So I do.
Oh, so you grew up in LA?
I grew up like more in San Diego.
Okay.
We would visit LA all the time. I always wanted to live there when I was younger. And then, you know, when I finally like would, I remember I tried to live there in my 20s, and that's when I was living out of my car and like extremely hopeful about my chances. And like literally after a couple of weeks, it was like, this is horrible. Well, then I came back.
Yeah.
Especially back then, mate. It was like, especially when you're young, I guess, but it used to be kind of different, I feel, because the porn industry was a lot bigger. It was just like a much darker place. I felt like.
Oh, okay. Was that, see, because I wasn't here at the time. I grew up in San Francisco and I didn't move here until 8 years ago. So what was that seeping into Hollywood too? I always thought that was a San Fernando Valley type of vibe.
I don't know. I feel like it was all around, and I guess I shouldn't really maybe blame that, but there was just like a lot of it was just a dark vibe. I guess LA is kind of a dark city though, even without all that.
It's interesting. Yeah. LA, I think about this all the time, because as I walk through LA, I'm always walking through Los Angeles as a San Franciscan, but I live in LA and I love LA.
Yeah.
But it's still kind of aesthetically jarring to me because of how spread out it is. But at the same time, it's beautifully amazing because of how spread out it is. It's such a push and pull, I think.
Well, yeah. And it's such a, like, there's so many, like, there's just secret like communities in it. There's so much there. Once you get to know it and actually live there, there is like, and I talk about this in the book, like how it's like the most beautiful city and the most ugly city in the world, depending on where you're standing. Like there's such like this sense, I feel like, of like multiple parallel universes all sort of layered on top of each other in one like location, you know?
Yeah. And what I like about it as well is, I tend to, you know, like there's a, I guess there's a lot of people coming in and out, so I could find my comrades, even in a situation where if I'm at like some industry screening or something or party and I'm just going and I'm feeling totally out of place, you know, and then it's just like, I find the one guy that looks the same way as me and we both have had, you know, and I'll never drink at these events. I used to like every, you know, 'cause all the events down here, they're just like, and here's top shelf bourbon. And I'm like, I'll take five, you know? And then I was just like, why am I doing this? So then I started never drinking at these events. And then I was like, oh, because I don't like most of these people. it's because I'm irritated. So just leave early or find another weirdo. And then that's so much more fun than being sloshed and like, you know.
No, and it is like true that there's like some of the coolest people not in the world, but there are some really freaking cool people there, because it's like you get all these creatives and they're all kind of there because they love storytelling. And so that's like really cool. Like even just like walking around LA and overhearing people's conversations, and they're all talking about creativity and like art and storytelling. And I think that's just like so cool, because where else do you have that? You
know, I know. It's
I would love LA. If I could afford it, man, I'd be there. But
yeah, well, you're there. Yeah, I'm in a rent control situation, so I'm like, I'm not budge until I buy. But yeah, that's the, it's like in San Francisco, I used to hate it when I would overhear tech conversations or people talking about tech, and it would just like jar me, because I'm like, you know, it's fine, but come on, not at my cafe where I'm sitting here trying to read and I'm being a, you know, I'm being a beatnik, you know, or whatever. And then, but in LA, I have like screenwriting students, and I have a screenplay I had to read last night, and I was going to bring it to the cafe, but I can't bring myself to go to a cafe with a screenplay to read and do and redline, because then it feels like I'm the jerk. You know, it's like, oh, who does he think he is sitting there with a script and a dream? No, no, I'm just.
I know, like, I've never been able to do the writing in public thing either.
Oh, no, I write in public all the time.
Oh, sorry.
No.
No, I hate that.
No, yeah, we can be disagreeable. It's fine. No, I write in public all the time, but I usually handwrite or I'm redlining, but just there's something about the screenplay format, like. Yeah. Here, I'll show you, which, you know, this is what I had to do, you know, what I redlined last night. I don't want to bring this to a cafe. That makes me look like a sad screenwriter, even though I am a sad screenwriter. but I don't want to bring that energy there. I'd rather have a book and then be writing a novel, you know, or scenes, handwriting. So.
Why not?
Yeah. Good times. And then how did you end up leaving LA? Did you say... I got so many book deals. And you like dropped your books and you're like, I'm out.
No, it was because, like, well, to be honest, it's like COVID, man. Like, I only moved there to LA, like, what, like probably I was there for like 2 years, right? So like I moved there, and like after 1 year, it was like COVID, and I was like locked down, and I was paying like $3,000 a month to be locked in like a basement, you know, that place. And I was like, no, this.
Oh, so you were in Beechwood when the COVID okay.
That's when I wrote this book, was like down, was that when it started. I wrote the first draft. But yeah, so it was like, this sucks. And so then I got a dog and I got a horse, and I was like, I want to live with my horse. So I was like, how can I be close to LA and have my horse in my backyard?
So some people got COVID dogs, but you got a COVID dog and a COVID horse.
Yeah, I got COVID everything, mate. It's so funny. Like, what would have happened if I hadn't? Because like I don't usually spend money, but like whenever COVID happened, I was like, let's go to town. Like, who cares?
Oh, really?
It's all over. Yeah, I was like, buy everything, whatever.
So was the horse the biggest purchase, or was there?
I bought a car and I bought a house that I live in. So.
Oh, yeah. Cool. So it all worked out. COVID worked out great for you, or you'd still be in a basement apartment in Beechwood Canyon.
I know, I probably would, with like driving my sister's car around, you know. I mean, it's just like making a life that you can live with. I mean, I'm a very like solo person anyway, so even whenever I was in LA, I probably only went out once a month, so like before COVID, right? So I think part of it too is like just accepting, like, you don't have to be like super social. You can just go, you know.
Right, yeah.
Like, because I used to always feel bad about it, but now with COVID, it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Be yourself.
Yeah, it's funny. Well, what's, you know, I mean, you know, I didn't know San Diego and Los Angeles had such different cultures until I came down to live down here. And it's very, it's so intriguing to me, because I just thought, oh, it's all cool. And then I come down here, and then I'm like, you know, people say, oh yeah, I was trying to get out of San Diego as fast as possible. I'm like, why would you want to do that? And then it's just like, oh wait, interesting.
Yeah, I did really used to not, I mean, I don't like, I mean, I still don't live there, but like I used to really, hate San Diego, because I felt like there was no culture like whatsoever. It's just like surfing and stuff, and like maybe smoking weed, which I don't do either of those things.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting though, right? So you were raised Jehovah's Witness. I was raised Mormon.
No way. Oh my God.
So like I had kind of a different, I think, upbringing in a way, like even.
But similar at the same time.
Well, no, sorry. Yeah. Similar to you, but different to other people in San Diego who probably just had like a chilled out. I was kind of like, you know, going to church and stuff like that. So
did you go on mission?
Extra reason to get away. No, back then they didn't encourage women to go on missions. They've kind of changed their.
Oh, bless their heart. Wasn't that a great way to get out of it?
Well, yeah, like it was weird. Like back then it was like you had to be older and like kind of like didn't really push it. They wanted you to get married. I actually went to Brigham Young University for a few years, the Mormon University.
Oh, okay.
This is all right. And then before, like then LA and then London and all that kind of stuff.
So but when you were a Mormon, was it encouraged to be creative and write? Like, did you have that?
Definitely not. No, it was encouraged to go to church, have friends who are Mormon, and give them all your money.
Yeah. All your money and all your time.
Yeah.
There'll be no reason to be anywhere else.
Yeah, man.
Because I fully believed in the Jehovah's Witnesses. So I wasn't like, I sat there thinking, oh, I'm duped. Oh, I'm in a cult. I was and then it took me a long time to grapple with the possibility that it was wrong. How did you leave Mormon?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when I was younger, even like growing up, I felt like I never really took it like that seriously. But then I'm a very like intense and passionate person. So then also I'd have like these moments of being like, oh yeah, it's definitely, you know, but like, I would say primarily, I didn't take it serious. And I was kind of like more of like a joker and like, you know, Sunday school and stuff. So then I wanted to go to UCLA, but mm-hmm. I felt a lot of pressure to go to BYU.
I don't know that much about college because I didn't go to college, but it sounds like, I mean, that's the great thing about Mormons is you can like actually get a education. And Jehovah's Witnesses, you don't go to college.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, I think Jehovah's Witnesses is sort of the stricter of the two, I would say.
I know. If I would have went Mormon, I might still be in.
Oh my God. Yeah, I never know.
It might be so cool. I would have never left.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Like you would have.
Yeah. So did you get married young then or were you out by that point?
Yeah, I married like the English guy. So yeah, I went to like BYU.
He wasn't Mormon though.
No, he was like the opposite of Mormon.
So that's like an act of what do you call it? That's acting out as a Mormon to marry non-Mormon.
I literally like, okay, this is like true story. So I was at BYU and I really felt like I just wanted to leave, but I felt trapped because I'm a very like people pleaser. So I felt like I couldn't get out. So I purposefully failed all of my classes, which is so, I mean, that's not right to do, but I was young. And because it's like my parents obviously like paid like for me to be there, probably like, you know, I mean, not that much because they're Mormon. And so it's pretty cheap for Mormons. But
oh, can I pretend to be Mormon and go get a master's degree at BYU? Yeah, and then
you have to pay 10% of your income, I think, to be a Mormon. So watch out for that one. But, but so I tried to like get kicked out and I didn't get kicked out. So I then basically was like, obviously my parents like found out I'd like failed my classes and I like basically said to them I didn't want to do this. And that's when I moved to LA and lived out of my car. That was a disaster, which I won't go into because it's way too intense. But then I ended up moving to London because I just really wanted to get away from, I mean, I love my parents, they're great, but I needed to get away from like that influence so I could like actually have my own life. And I think that's honestly like not like, I think that's part of the reason that my life kind of went so like sideways though, is because I just didn't really have, and I'm sure you can relate to this, like I just didn't know how to not be Mormon because I had been raised to follow like that whole thing. And like the foundation of like how I like saw the world was all built on that. So like when you take that away, I didn't know how to like be a normal person, like, sorry, not normal, but a not Mormon person.
Right.
So it's like you almost have like a total like, you know, kind of like breakdown of yourself and you have to like kind of figure it out on your own. And I felt like really unable to do like the most sort of things that people take for granted, right?
Yeah. I've been out for a while, but I still have it's essentially your whole belief, it's everything shattered in you. I try to explain it to people how it worked for me is Once I had kind of a realization, it was like earth became ocean and ocean became earth. Yeah. I was just nothing was real and I was in danger. And that's what was kind of going on in my head.
Yeah.
And even to this day, I still have remnants of it, but I can kind of like work with it.
No, it is. It's almost like you have to like be like, you're like, have to be like born again. You have to like start over because it's so even ingrained from when you were a child or a baby. You know, you almost feel like then you have to kind of like just like start over, which can be super messy.
Yeah. And good. Yeah, no, and good for you for getting out, because I know you don't want to go into the homeless stuff, and I won't ping you on that at all, but we do have to take extreme measures to get away. It's really crazy.
And like back then, I mean, I feel like now, I don't know what it's like for people now. I'm sure it's also still hard, but it's like, it wasn't like there was like nowadays there's like the internet. There's more people who have moved like away from the church. Like back then I did not have anyone who was in my position that was, I had zero support system. And like, even like people I'd interact with for honestly the rest of my life, I feel like nobody really gets it, which I guess everyone feels like that about their life. But it's just like when you go through something that's like so big and you just feel like you always feel like it really contributes. I already felt this way, but it really contributes to you always feeling like an outsider, you know?
Yeah. And for me, it was always kind of feeling like I'm doing something wrong when I'm connecting with people who aren't.
Well, yeah. And then like self-hatred you have to deal with. You have to deal with this, like, this is not evil. Like, I'm not like, this is not Satan that's controlling me. Like, you know what I mean? Or like,
yeah,
stuff, man. It's heavy.
It is. Yeah. Oh, you came to the right place. I got all the heavy. Yeah. It's, I was even like recently, I didn't even realize that you could, it didn't even dawn on me that I could be friends with, like, I could be friends with my doctor. You know, you could be friends with people that you can actually go, hey, you know, that block was, they are all other. And then you could, and then I still find myself tribal, because like I have almost all my friends are writers or musicians, but it's like, no, wait a second. You know, I kind of get in a weird tribal thing, and I'm like, wait, I can be friends with people outside of this tribe and embrace that. And then I don't know. Plus I feel like I've had to catch up so much. Like even when I was like catching up on R-rated movies. I don't know how the Mormons did it. But oh my God, I went to film school by going to the video store and the library and just like, I wanted to know what a Scorsese was. I knew what he was, but I never was able to watch any of those films.
That was like me in college, or like when I moved to England and people were like, oh, Rolling Stones, which I was like, I have no frame of reference. Not that I like loved Rolling Stones, because I don't, but I really just had like no, like, you know, I don't know, the golden oldies, that's all I had.
Right. And people don't get how there's that disconnect. Like Saturday morning cartoons are just out of my peripheral, because I was preaching every Saturday. I was preaching. So people say, oh my God, remember this? And I'm like, no, I was knocking on your door while you were in your pajamas and eating cereal.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. Did you ever read Under the Banner of Heaven?
No, I've heard about it though. It's about, is it
Scientology?
No,
it's Mormons.
Oh, it is about Mormons. Okay.
Yeah. That's one of the places.
I don't know one. Who wrote it?
I can't remember, but I remember when I was reading it, I was reading it at a cafe, and one of the ladies that worked there, she kind of looked at the book and was like, almost like fell over. And I found out she grew up Mormon, and I was like, oh, I was like, would you, but she was like totally punk rock and out of the Mormons. But at the same time, she was like, I can't even look at that book. I can't read it. It freaks me out. Well, and I was like, I get that. You don't understand how much I get that.
Yeah, because they teach you that, like, it's to even read the anti-Mormon literature is like that's like the devil. And of course, you're going to believe it because that's Satan. And it's like, so yeah, you're totally like out of it. That's like the crazy thing is, because like, now I feel like I'm at a point, like this was a long time ago that I like, transitioned out of the Mormon church, where I can like kind of be cool with it. But like, it's just weird, man, because it's totally like, I don't know. I've lost my train of thought.
Well, I mean, it's, we were talking about what it's like to, you know, it's like you can leave physically, but it's just like then to like read anything that's against the theology. Oh,
yeah. I was gonna say, sorry, it's just that it's like when you can look at it from a distance, you're like, this is so ridiculous and like patently obviously fake, but still. Okay, so I have 8 brothers and sisters, and only one is not Mormon. All the other ones are still Mormon, and it's so hard for me to like understand. Well, it's probably hard for them to understand me, but I'm like, how can you possibly? But because they shield you from ever reading anything against the church, you just don't know this stuff at all,
right?
you know, but it's like, you can like trace, like you can look at Joseph Smith and who he was before he created the church. And it totally, like, the Genesis is there. Like everything, like he was out telling people there was gold in the mountains and making up stories about ancient civilizations. And then suddenly he comes out with some book that's exactly like what he was already doing for years before, you know, and it's, we're supposed to think it came out of nowhere. Anyway.
Yeah. And that, in that, in that period of time, that's like the mid 1800s, right? With, 'cause that was Joseph Smith then.
Yeah,
and that was the Jehovah's Witnesses too. I mean, they were
there was and that's the thing though. That's why he invented it. That was the trend back then, that people were inventing these religions, and he used to go to all of these revivals and events like with his family, and then he was like, basically, oh, okay, I'm gonna have a piece of that action in it, because he was like, obviously he was a very charismatic individual, and so, you know, he just kind of like rolled with it. But that's like, I guess like what I mean in terms of like, there's a total like genesis of it. Like it all kind of makes sense when you actually look at the real history, but they lie to you about what happened. They change dates. They like, you know.
Yes. We got that too. They changed, they even changed Bible dates to fit their narrative in the Jehovah's Witnesses. But it's so hard because I was in it, and I was totally, looking back as like, you know, if I had never been in it, I would go, oh my God, that poor guy was duped. But people don't understand that it's, there is no realization when you're in it. When you're in it, it's just life, you know, it's, there's well, nothing else.
Also, yeah. I think that, and the thing is that people sometimes don't realize is that we're all in it. We're all in some story that's made up, and we all think it's true.
Yes. Even outside.
Yeah. There's like, it's like just more insidious, or more like, you know, I mean, even like the government and this country and everything, it's all a made up history, and we're all just living it like it's, you know, real.
I gotta say, people who come out of, you know, really, what do they call it? High mind control groups. Well, I feel like I can see through some things in politics where I'm just like, why are you all getting behind this person? This is just a person out. This is a cult of personality with an agenda. And it's just kind of, but people are still getting duped. Feel free to disagree with me, because this is, I'm going to go way out there now. But like, I think like there, we have been in this like Judeo-Christian morality for thousands of years, a couple thousand years at least, like in general in the West. And then now that that's gone away, all of a sudden the politicians are rising up as the deities of our day.
Well, yeah.
Now tell me I'm crazy if I'm crazy, because I'm open for that.
I agree with you, but I think that's always probably been the case. It's like with the rulers, they try to make them deify themselves. It's like kings will say that they're like part God, right? And that's, that's always kind of the thing. But like, I guess the thing is that too, is like once you start, like you have to kind of like, I guess like accept the bet, you're always going to be slightly duped, and you're always going to be kind of screwed over. You have to just accept like the best one you can get, I guess, you know, right? Because you can't have something that doesn't, I mean, there's no, I guess, perfect ideology or even way of looking at the world, right?
True. So. I mean, if it was all my world, I would have the most land and the most riches, you know, but power wouldn't get to me. I'd be cool with the people down there too. At the same time, they would have to kiss my ring every day.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah. You're like, oh, man, that sounds great.
What we have. It's fine.
Do you ever feel like that we have the tools coming out of that, that we could probably start a cult, and we know the recipe to get people to follow us?
I mean, I think like for me personally, I'd have to be a man, like, but I think if I was a man and like hot, I'd be fine. So I guess
you could go divine. You could go the woman divine. The feminine divine is
things or something, but
yeah,
I think at least in this like world that we have right now, I'd probably need to.
Oh
like,
wait, do you need a dude to pull the strings on? We can like come together on this and start our cult.
Let's start looking. You're in Hollywood, so
yeah. Find something. But you said they have to be good looking and you know.
Don't be shocked what we can get away with. Don't be surprised.
Yeah, it blows my mind. When you're being a writer, how are you accepted by your brothers and sisters who are still Mormons? Do they praise that, or is that kind of like, we really wish, sister, that you were kind of putting your time into other things?
No, I mean, they're actually really great about it. I'm actually super close with my family and they're really good about all that kind of stuff. And, you know, really supportive. Like I'm doing like one of my events is with my sister, who's like a news reporter. So like, yeah, they're really good about it. And it's definitely like, I felt like initially, cause it's been such a long time now, like we're talking like maybe like 15, 20 years since I left the church. And I think initially it was super kind of hard, although I wouldn't say anyone was supportive, but like still, you know, it's like family. So they still definitely like put these, you know, sometimes put these little like sort of like jabs in. And I know like all my mom cares about is that I get married and have kids and they all just want me to go back to the church. And it's like, they're still pushing for it. So there is an element of like, okay, you're never really going to see me because you can't.
Yeah. Which,
you know, it's kind of hard, but at the same time, we all have a great relationship and everything. And they're all super awesome. Be honest, it's just it's like a weird thing. It's like a weird, you know, submerged barrier, you know.
Yeah, it's and at the same time, I know, you know, I know their point of view, because they if you're in that belief system, all they want for you is the best for your life, and they really truly, they're not, it's not a sinister thing, they really truly feel that you need to come back and get married and have kids,
yeah,
to live a fulfilled life. They're not, because they're in a group mindset where they can't think that there's an individuality of success, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Do you have siblings?
I have a younger sister. Yeah.
Okay. And is she still in it?
That's actually a really complicated story. I haven't talked to her in like 30 years, but she's not in it. Uh-huh. I don't know if it's, she has borderline personality disorder or what the situation is, but it's, I wouldn't, you know, I'd be fine hanging out with her and talking to her, but there's so much, she doesn't talk to anybody. She's like a hermit. Okay. So, and kind of like shut down, I guess is, so yeah. So there's no communication there. And yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's, I mean, you know, life is complicated,
isn't it? Yeah. And it's, and sometimes it's just like, oh, but life is so not complicated, but then we dig in and we're like, oh wait, relationships.
No, I know, really. Yeah, you're totally right. Like when you're doing like an interview like this, you're like thinking about all this stuff that you never think about, and you're like, oh my gosh,
right?
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
Going back to when did you go, wait a second, I think I'm a writer?
So to be honest, like, I guess I always have like written stories, like growing up and stuff. And I used to be an actress. Like I used to write little like screenplays and da 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 da. But then I think after I left the Mormon church, I would say for a long time, I didn't really know what to do. I also felt very like there was no point to like life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, it wasn't my most like ambitious period. Like I was kind of like, I'm not going to do anything because the government's just trying to make me like work for, you know, although I did work, to be fair, not like I always had a job, but like, you know, I just wasn't ambitious. I didn't really believe in ambition. Let's say I didn't
really
making money. And I was just like, kind of like, you know, just getting by, let's say.
Well, that makes sense, because if you're ambitious, you're ambitious against the Mormons, or even against the Jehovah's Witnesses, if you're ambitious outside of them. This is what I found that I grapple with, is if I pursue things that are not in line with the Jehovah's Witnesses, then there's a little thunder in my soul, because that DNA is going, you're doing the wrong thing. You're putting your time in the wrong way. Yeah. And I have to get over that. So I think it's, I think there's little, there's stuff that I still have to work through where it's like, no, wait a second, this is worthy of my time.
No, that's so wild, man. There's so many things you don't really consider. And then you're like, oh my gosh, that probably is like a huge a contributing factor. Yeah. But so my sister-in-law is a really successful writer, and I kind of like just watched her success. And I was like, dude, I want to try to do that. So
who's your sister-in-law?
Her name's Kirsten White. So she writes like a lot of like young adult and—
Oh, cool.
And middle grade novels, but this year her adult debut is coming out. It's called Hyde.
Yeah.
She's also a former Mormon. I think I'm
Oh old. My God. I have to get her on Drinks with Tony.
You should. Like she's awesome. So her book is okay. Well, let's just quickly talk about the book. It's called Hyde. It's being published by Del Rey, which is House, the ones that did like Mexican Gothic, like really cool. So it's kind of a horror tinged thriller. And it's about all these people who are taken to this abandoned amusement park for this like contest. And they don't really know what the sort of contest is. And that I don't like spoil it, but like, obviously you find
everyone out. Dies in the end. Okay.
find out. Yeah, so it's really fun. It has a really awesome, like, cool cover. It's kind of like a 70s type.
Oh, they have the cover already too.
Yeah, that's you cool. have to look. It's cool. It's like almost like an old Stephen King style cover. Like, it's a very cool cover. Yeah, so it's called Hide. But I watched her do it and I was like, dude, how'd she do it? So I was like, let me just do what she did. So I like joined Twitter and I just started like reading all of those like blog posts about how to write a book, how to get an agent, like just got all the information that I could. And then I wrote like my first book and I sent it out to agents and they were like, oh, we like the idea, but we don't like the book. So I was like, okay, well, they like the idea. Let me rewrite the entire book. So I rewrote the entire book. And I actually, this time I was able to like get agents interested, picked an agent, got like a publisher interested or whatever, multiple ones and picked one. So that was my young adult books. And then,
oh, okay.
Yeah. So then
so like, you started in YA.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because like, I honestly was like just copying Kirsten and she was in YA. Mm-hmm. And so like, to me, it didn't even occur to me that I could do anything else. So yeah, I sold those and my husband literally died like right after. And it was so annoying because it was like, we had been like poor, like our whole time together. And like, I finally was like actually going to get money and we were gonna, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just the worst. Yeah. So
did you tell him what you, I don't know if you believe in the afterlife, but if you look up to heaven and go, you know what? We could have had this together, okay. You.
Of course, sometimes you do. You go through different emotions when someone dies, especially like his whole thing. It was a whole horrible thing. Anyway, so yeah, then I did those two books. My second book was obviously terrible because I, you know, it was too soon to be writing a book and it was just really bad.
Yeah.
So then,
well, it's processing. You got to process a lot.
Yeah. I was like under a contract, and I wasn't thinking clearly. It was like delusional, crazy thinking almost. Yeah. So then it was like 5 years between that and my adult books selling. And I try, like at first I was trying really hard to get published again, and I was just kept getting rejected by my own agent. And finally I was like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. So I said to my agent, I don't want to do, you know, I quit basically. And then that's when I moved back to America. I started working at a dude ranch, which turned out to be another nightmare. But this time, like a year later, when I moved to LA, I used that experience for my book, If I Disappear. And that's how I got my next deal. So it was kind of interesting because I like quit and started doing something else. And then that's how I kind of got back into it.
Huh. That's fantastic. I mean, and at the same time, do you realize how majorly huge that is? And so many people like never get published, you know, or never.
Oh yeah, for sure. Oh. Of course. Like, I mean, I think that all the time. You know, I think everyone does. It's like, it's weird. Like even like my friends who are like uber successful, it's like, we're all thinking tomorrow it might all be over. You know what I mean? Even like I have friends who are like bestsellers and you think, oh, they're probably just chill, but no, they're like, oh my gosh, my next book is not going to do well. Everyone's going to hate it. Or my career is over.
Yeah. And I think that's what, that's who the great writers are, because I was talking to someone and she was telling me, yeah, she's, you know, it's just like, man, you're like, she's like looking at me like I'm really successful. I'm like, you know, like I've peaked. And I'm like, wait, what? No. Yeah, I didn't peak yet. I've done some, you know, I've done some stuff, which my therapist always goes, Tony, let's go over your successes again, because you don't realize what you've done. And I'm like, oh, you know, I've done everything wrong. I made every wrong decision. I should, the way the movie like did, you know, I could have done this and this instead after, but instead I went this way. And she's like, Tony, let's step back. Now tell me how many of your friends have done this and this. Does anyone from you grew up with, did anybody in the Jehovah's Witnesses or who left the Jehovah's Witnesses, has anyone done what you've done? And I'm like, no. And so, you know, but I'm still not successful. Okay. It's
true though. I mean, to get a movie made, that's like, I can't even, that's like another level. That's really hard. Cause I've like done like, you know, work on developing stuff and you're like, how does this even happen? And I know it's like, I feel like for every, like I'm like almost every writer, it's always kind of like it can be a very like sort of stressful experience because things don't always go the way you want, or you have like,
it's always worse. I mean, and I not to compare it to childbirth, because I haven't had a kid, nor do I have ovaries, but it's just like, it's, there's points of it that are so high and points of it that are so low and awful, and you're like fighting and you don't, and you don't have enough sleep. And it's, but there's something sexy about it too, where you get out of it and you go, we came out alive. And then it's just like,
I want to do it again.
Yeah, I kind of do. Cause there, the forced immediate intimacy that happened, especially with me and the few of the people that,
yeah.
When I say intimacy, I'm not talking in a sexual nature. I'm talking in just friendship, but it's just like, you know, something about these people, and it's, you were on that battleship with them, and you were all kind of sleepless and loopy, and you all got into conflict, and you all got out of conflict. And then the healthy ones kind of like are really cool. And you're just like, don't ever leave me for the rest of my life. And they're like, you mean you neither. You know,
oh, that sounds so cool.
Yeah.
That's why people keep going back for more.
I know, it's like, I kind of think of it like war. It's and I, you know, as I'm reading All Quiet on the Western Front right now. I don't know if you've ever read that.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's, we're both catching up on our literature. I mean, it's just like, people are like, you haven't read that yet? I'm like, no, come on, man. I'm trying to catch up. But that's all World War One. But I'm reading that. It's just like the intimacy of men at war in World War One is, it feels similar to the intimacy of what it's like to be on a low budget film set where we're all shacked up in same accommodations and stuff.
You have a common dream and you're all sort of fighting for something together.
Yeah. Instead of wanting to kill the Russians dead.
Like slightly, maybe slightly less rock.
But in the film industry, it's way more violent.
Well, I'll take your word for it. I don't know, I have experience with either, so.
No, but you work on developing scripts and stuff. How did you get into that?
So to be honest, like when I originally moved to LA and like was like, had the idea for If I Disappear, which is like basically the idea is just like, what if a true crime podcast host went missing? I was like, ooh, this would be like a great, you know, like movie or TV show. But like the more I started researching the industry, the more I was like, well, it's impossible to get in. So I wrote it as a book. So when my agent, so I have an agent at WME. And so whenever she was going to sell it, she was like, do you want to like be attached as a writer? And I was like, yeah. So we spoke to like multiple production companies, and the ones that, there was two that came together that were willing to let me write. And so we're like, yeah, we go with you. And then for Good Rich People, again, like we like sort of included that I had to be a writer. And this time it was cool because there was multiple people that were willing or even, you know, excited to have me write, you know, so that's like really cool. Yeah, but totally because my agent, I think the thing is, it's like, if you have a situation where you can get more than one person interested, then usually that's how you get that on the table, right? Because a lot of people don't want you to, I mean, most people probably don't want you to write.
Yeah.
But if that's the only way they can get you and it's a competitive thing, then they'll be like, okay, we'll give you a chance.
So have you written the screenplay for Good Rich People yet?
No, we literally just closed on that. And like the only reason we even took it out is because they were getting a lot of interest from people early, you know, like we weren't even going to take it out. So we literally have just closed on that. I haven't spoken to the company that, well, I've spoken to them whenever they, you know, sort of made the offer and everything, but yeah.
We how fun. I want to see this movie.
TV series, man.
Oh, TV series. Oh, even better.
Yes. That's what I wanted to do, because some people only wanted to do film, and I was like, no.
Well, we're in such a different time where TV is utterly intriguing.
Yeah.
Who would have thunk that TV would be better than film?
No, and the cool thing about TV, too, is I feel like it's more about character, which I really like. And it's like you're going on a journey, and it's also like, as a medium, it's probably like the most reflective of real life, because people don't change. For years and years, and they keep making the same mistakes. No, but it's just like, yeah.
You hit that nail on the head. I've never thought of it that way, that people that in a TV series, they're going to make the same mistakes over and over, kind of in real life. Where in a film, they have to have an epiphany and go, oh, wait a second, I've learned this about myself, whether it's good or bad.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, that's what makes it, I think, kind of like, it's kind of like tricky and easy at the same time to write a show, but it's also what people start getting so mad and they go, well, he's still the same and he hasn't changed. And it's like, well, dude, but if he did, it'd be over.
Right.
Don't you get that? Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai.
Together. They can't get together.
If Seinfeld became a mechanic, the whole series would just go away.
Yeah, no.
Anyway. Did you watch Seinfeld growing up, or was that not in your house?
Yeah, no, I did. I did watch it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
didn't like it when it came out, and then, you know, when I was younger, I was just like, I didn't get it, because I just didn't understand those people, the situation. And then when Curb Your Enthusiasm came out, and then I realized that Larry David was Jason Alexander, then I watched Seinfeld in a different way.
Yeah, one of my friends was like super into it. I like those were, you know, they're of the time, but it's a funny show.
It was an important show at the time too. They broke taboos, which I didn't even realize what was happening. But
Yeah,
it's good fun. Mm-hmm. Eliza, what are you doing to celebrate your book release? Do you have a book release celebration, or are you just going to ride your horse?
This is how I usually celebrate a book release, is like I do other stuff to try to make sure that you like remind yourself that there's more to life than just your book. Because it's like, I think if you get too wrapped up in this and you have all these expectations and stuff, you know, you're just going to like be disappointed, and it's important to like have that. So like, yeah, I'll be riding my horse, like maybe go to Disneyland, because I always go to Disneyland. You know, not like just do other stuff. And don't even do anything writing related, because I think that it can just be like kind of crushing otherwise.
Yeah. Well, there is something so weird about something that you've worked so hard on, then all of a sudden everybody can get it at once.
Yeah.
That relationship still blows my mind. And then it's hard for me to think about too. Like sometimes I can stand up and go, yeah, that was me. And then other times I'm like, I put my head back in the sand and I'm like, no, I'm down over here working on something.
Yeah. And I feel like, honestly, like everyone plays the comparison game, and it doesn't matter how successful you are. You always think of, and if you, you know, you have to just like realize what you're doing, because everyone does it. And they go like, well, but this author had, you know, they got this or whatever it is. And like, I think that's why I think it's sometimes important to just be like, okay, it's coming out. Yay. But like, also, you know, you're never going to have like the perfect experience. So just enjoy the good stuff and don't worry about not, you know, I guess not getting things or whatever it is.
Eliza, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, man. We were talked all over the place here. Hold on.
You're listening to 101.9 FM KPCR LP Santa Cruz.